So, welcome to Lecture 24, April 14th, Lecture Notes, page 220, earlier in the month, and still ongoing. We wished all of you that celebrated Ramadan a blessed Ramadan. Now we turn to those celebrating Easter. So we've got your best Friday, Good Friday wishes. We've got your Easter Sunday wishes. And for those celebrating Passover, you, your family, and your friends, happy Passover to you and yours. I think that covers most of the holidays. Yes? Face coverings, face coverings, face coverings. Yes? This is old news. This is old news. The new part of this is, so far, 10% of you have bothered to fill out the course evaluation. If you move it along, you help everyone's grade, including yourself, with the extra credit that the class gets for doing the course evaluation. How do you do it? Find the email and complete it. Or on the class website, click Course Evaluations and fill it out. Thank you. Thank yourselves. This is just the dates, which we know about. So, mini test 12 will, well, I guess I should say, extra credit number 9 closes tonight on its regular schedule, 11:59 p.m. Extra credit number 10 opens tomorrow on its regular schedule, 8 a.m. Mini test 12 opens tomorrow on its regular schedule, 8 a.m. And we know midterm 2 is closed. So this is exactly where we expect a large class like this to be. It is every semester and has been for 13 years. So before any curve, the grade actually a little percentage point higher than sometimes, 66.7, much less like the uncurved midterm grade, number one grade of 67.5. So I've added the 5-point curve to all your grades, and so your curved mini-test midterm 2 average is 71.7%, rounds to 72. And whoever got the top score of 101, congratulations. Questions on that? And it's updated in your grade book, and if you organize the grade book the way I tell you to, you can scroll down and see all your grades, and you can see what you need to get on the remaining course material to earn an A, A minus, B plus, B, etc. Well, we know that. We know this. All right, so this just was an interesting sales promotion that McDonald's put together globally outside of the U.S. This smoke alarm delivers McDonald's when it senses that you've burned dinner. What's your plan B for when you burn dinner? Well, the world's largest fast food chain, McDonald's, hopes to make itself an automatic default for Plan B, as just with a newly developed smoke alarm that places an order to the closest McDonald's restaurant whenever it senses that the owner's food has been reduced to charcoal. So you know, we're getting consumers' attention with this. It's a sales promotion, a limited time event. It's humor in marketing. The McDelivery smoke detector was created using 3D printing to resemble a Big Mac. You can sort of see it up there. And it's available to win in the Netherlands during a limited period. So a bit of global marketing, again, sales promotion. The idea is that, well, fitted to the owner's kitchen ceiling, the McDelivery detector will sense when dinner is burnt before sending a text message to ask the amateur chef if they would prefer to order instead. A confirmation will then lead to an order being automatically placed and delivered in minutes, says the fast food chain. Terry de Graaf, brand manager for McDonald's Netherlands, explained in a statement, "We want to give our guests good times with tasty products and smart technology news. The McDelivery detector is a great gadget for people who have bad luck in the kitchen, just a little more often than others. I'm already looking forward to the fantastic anecdotes about the biggest cooking blunders." So we're getting consumers involved. A limited edition number of McDelivery detectors have been made available to customers who need them the most. To apply to become an owner of one of these special promotional objects, anyone in the Netherlands can use the McDonald's app to recount their worst cooking incident. Winners will be chosen to receive one as a prize, along with a regular smoke detector. So getting consumer involvement, sales promotion. Dar Van Dyck, chief creative officer of the ad agency, said, "How cool it is to have an extra gadget like the McDelivery detector in your home that arranges food for you when your own cooking skills let you down. We even integrated the iconic McDonald's jingle as a warning sound that lets you know your favorite food is on its way to your home. Chance to win one of the McDelivery detectors will run from April 13th until May 2nd. So, as with sales promotions, it's a limited time offer. So, I thought it was amusing and a bit of global marketing. How many of you guys have heard of internet porn? One person has heard of internet porn. Two people have heard of it. If you guys want to see me after class so I can explain to you what this next story is about, come see me. In any event, how many people know Liquid Death, the beverage? Liquid Death? A few more people know Liquid Death. So we've combined something a few people know with something that none of you know anything about. Liquid Death recruits porn stars for a sustainability-themed campaign. Liquid Death makes no apology for its provocative marketing. In fact, the brand runs headlong into eyebrow-raising territory regularly. They drew blood from Tony Hawk and introduced it into a limited set of cans. They hexed their own water supply, and they cozied up to cannibalistic themes, just to name a few recent stunts. This is them getting attention. So they get consumers' attention, they generate buzz, they appeal to a particular target audience. And on the heels of dropping a Super Bowl regional ad so controversial it made Four Loko blush, I don't know what that ad was, the brand has hired a cast and crew of adult film stars to create its latest campaign. So it is a celebrity advertising. And by the way, in case you're worried, home people, don't worry. This is all safe for children, safe for work. Lead actress Sherry DeVille, identified as stepmom to the internet, shills for the Renegade canned water in a 60-second hero video, calling it a sure way to murder her thirst. Oh.
Hey, I'm Sherry DeVille, adult film star and stepmom to the internet. And when I want to murder my thirst, I reach for a can of Liquid Death Mountain Water, because even though I'm into getting my by somebody who can really one thing I'm not into is single-use plastics. This aluminum can is infinitely recyclable, but plastic bottles are not. Why? Because recycling plastic isn't profitable. Most just end up in our landfills and oceans.
Ms. DeVille, your stepson is ready.
Thank you. So join me and Liquid Death in our mission to bring death to plastic. Come on, don't f*** the planet. Where's my mark?
So, Death to Plastic, brought to you from Liquid Death. Funny? Disgusting. Let's not do that sort of stuff. No one? No one's upset by it? You guys? Oh, you are. All right. Well, great. So, she follows the endorsement with a brief second round of turn-ons and turn-offs. She says she's not into single-use plastic that's polluting the environment. What does she like? Well, those descriptions are bleeped out, so viewers will have to use their imaginations. But the point is sustainability marketing. The spot is rife with sexual innuendos, in case you didn't catch those, in the form of animated sight gags, but ultimately it slides under a PG rating, even with its tagline, "Don't F the planet." So sex sells, humor sells, sex and humor sells. Statistically speaking, adult film stars are some of the most famous people on the internet, says the co-founder CEO, and since our mission is to bring death to plastic bottles on a mass scale, we need to reach as many people as possible with our message. So again, getting consumers' attention. Liquid Death has a history of working with adult film stars, including Chloe Cherry, Lisa Ann, and Joanna Angel, who directed the Don't F the Planet spot and has a cameo in it. The production crew also came from the porn industry, so I guess it's a form of diverse inclusion in marketing from a set of people who aren't normally mainstream. The cast members were over the moon to be involved in a fun video that was not porn. And we wanted to show that we do not think sex workers are demons, because many are amazing professionals that deserve a shot at gigs outside the adult film industry. Don't F the Planet launches on digital and social platforms and connected TV. So here's the media selection for this campaign for sustainability. And finally, it just happened to come up. I thought it was interesting, because it's a form of distribution, which is what we're talking about, in the UK. Anybody know, for some reason, see the fast food delivery Gorillas in New York City? Anybody happen to have been there? That's the one place they are in the States. So Gorillas taps the first year of the UK sales data for major advertising campaigns. So if you don't know, Gorillas is a German on-demand grocery delivery company with the promise of delivering groceries within 10 minutes of ordering by using dark stores. Dark stores aren't stores that you can walk into. They're this big storehouses where they can store their goods, an order comes in, and they bike off to deliver it. Gorillas operates in 55 cities in 9 countries, Belgium, Denmark, France, Germany, Italy, Netherlands, Spain, and the United Kingdom, and in the United States only in NYC currently, so global marketing and channels of distribution. Ultra-fast player Gorillas is marking its first year in the UK with an advertising campaign that reveals the purchasing habits of customers in different areas around London. So that's your ad campaign. The Whatever London Wants campaign encompasses out-of-home billboards, TV and radio ads, posters, projections, and murals. It features regionalized data from its dark stores and provocative slogans popping up around the capital. So that's the rad theme. They're trying to get consumers' attention. We're not like other instant delivery services, so our communications need to feel different too, says Danny Berry, head of Northern Europe for Gorilla. So we dug into our data to discover some fun facts about what people purchase where and collaborated with the ad agency to bring our insights to life in a playful and provocative set of campaigns. The campaign celebrates the fact that we know our customer's base. We're confident it will inspire others to try out the Gorillas app and to get the products they desire in minutes. So this is marketing research for action. This is the fast-moving campaign that shows what people want around town, their town.
London loves acid. Pints, poppers, hitting a bottle, big buns, milking it. Getting smashed, double dipping, a bit of grime, a good flow, getting wet. But the grocery London loves most is bananas. Literally, you order absolutely loads of them. Weirdos, Gorillas, whatever London wants.
So that's a little fast moving, a little silly, and they have a lot of more specific examples of what people order in different areas of town that they're publicizing. So what better way to get Londoners to sit up and be interested in on-demand groceries than letting them know what their neighbors are ordering? This is a big idea that can rise above the industry clutter, and we look forward to seeing it run in London and then in other cities around the world. Global marketing, getting consumers' attention. Since launching in London last year, Gorillas had delivered 8 million products to consumers. We can't believe it. It's only been 1 year since we first launched in London at our Shoreditch warehouse. Since then, the business has gone from strength to strength, expanding to dozens of micro-fulfillment centers in London alone, and further 4 regional locations across the UK. So innovation in channels of distribution and obviously challenges for traditional grocery stores. Although at the same time, grocery stores use multiple channels of distribution, some of the traditional grocery stores are supplying goods to the local Gorillas. So they worked out a partnership with these guys. So innovation in channels of distribution. So we pick up the lecture notes, page 220, page 409 of the textbook, chapter 15, Managing Marketing Channels and Supply Chain. So we're talking about different channels of distribution, different ways they play out. And here we're talking about what I guess we'll say is the new word in quotes, omnichannel marketing. It's a repositioning of an older term, multi-channel marketing. So omnichannel marketing is the integration and the cooperation of the various channels organizations use to interact with consumers with the goal of creating a consistent brand experience for the consumer. This includes a combination of the physical stores and the digital channels. This intends to create a convenient, seamless user experience for consumers that offers many opportunities to buy the product or the service. For example, this strategy may give consumers the chance to find and purchase online, in-store, or in a combination such as buy online and pick up in-store. Have any of you guys done that? You go to the website, you say, deliver it to my store, and I'll go pick it up in an hour or whatever. Well, that's 2 channels of distribution, as it were, right? The web and in person, and requires an interesting degree of coordination to make it work. IT folks, IS folks, thank you very much for helping us out with that. Dual distribution, we would use dual distribution, sort of a version of multi-channel. to reach two or more targets through different channels. So you avoid dependence on a single channel arrangement. Quite a while ago, but nonetheless important to the company, Pepsi-Cola had a single distribution channel for its product in all of the Philippines. There was only one distributor for all of their product in the Philippines, which is a large number of people. Some sort of dispute happened. They had no way of getting Pepsi into the Philippines till they resolved the dispute. Sometimes it'd be good to have a couple channels of distribution to get your product going, right? So we avoid total dependence on a single channel arrangement. Historically, in the past, distribution channels stressed the independence of the individual members, the producer, the wholesaler, the retailer, and it focused on those individual needs and objectives. And we led off with this when we started talking about this last time. But over time, we've seen the importance of having channel members work together, having vertical integration. Let's hear a little chat from Jeffrey Gannett, the CEO of Macy's, on the importance of channel partnerships.
You've said you've had many mentors along the way. Can you single out one who gave you the best leadership advice ever?
Bob Jagger. I was an electronics buyer at Macy's California. And I was going for the jugular with every one of my vendors in every negotiation that I was making. And I was putting wins on the board. And he pulled me by the ear out of a meeting one day. And he basically told me, you will win every battle, but you're going to lose this war. You've got to create win-win partnerships or you're never going to be successful in this business. And that was a game changer for me. And I started to say, okay, I'm going to put myself in the partner's shoes in every single negotiation. And that has shaped my win-win business partnership strategy ever since. So what I'm known for is collaboration. And I will tell you that was a seminal moment in my career that he taught me.
So this is, if you will, the opposite of everybody out for themselves and doing the best that I can do. And I'm Macy's, and by golly, I'm going to get the best deal out of you. Too bad for you. Instead, we'll do some partnerships. We'll do some win-win stuff. We'll develop relationships with the coronavirus pandemic is accelerating the consumer shift to e-commerce, which you know, and forecasts are that many department stores may have to shutter for good. To deliver steady long-term growth, we believe brands can no longer rely just on malls or just on department stores to drive traffic. Brands have to generate their own audiences and become destinations to succeed over time. We'll see what happens next and next. So in this conventional marketing system, we have the producer, we have the wholesaler, we have the retailer down to the consumer, and channel members focus on their own goals and objectives. So as the retailer, as a young man, Jeffy was focused only on what was best for his company. Forget about you. Well, the other people have to survive and work over the long run too. What if we develop partnerships? So eventually we moved to the idea, not in every industry even today, of a vertical marketing system where the producer, the wholesaler, and the retailer work together to create efficiencies, good flow of product, reduced inventory distractions, and because it's more efficient, everybody earns more money and the consumer gets the good faster and cheaper. So we tightly coordinate the channel members to improve operating efficiency and marketing efficiency in our vertical marketing system. Sometimes a vertical marketing system is owned by one channel member. Has anybody ever been to Nike Town in Manhattan, the Nike store, their flagship store? When you go in there, you can't also buy a pair of Adidas and a pair of New Balance. What do you buy there? Nike products. Why? They own the channel. And so they don't have to worry about the retailer selling other brands. They own the channel. Kroger's has a system where they own many of their own products. Sherwin-Williams, you go into a Sherwin-Williams store, and if you're talking about paint, that's the only paint you can buy there. Go to Home Depot, you can buy a whole bunch of different brands. Go to Sherwin-Williams store, it's owned by the producer. Luxottica Group, we'll talk more about them either on the next slide or in just a little bit. So one approach is where the corporation owns the channel. Yeah, here's Luxottica. So Luxottica, the vertical integration of design of glasses, production, and distribution represents a business model that is unique in the eyeglasses industry. Our company, Luxottica, together with long-lasting partnerships with leading luxury and fashion brands, provides outstanding results. So we have a vertical integration business model such that across its product lines, Luxottica has R&D design. They then develop prototype and industrialization for their products. On production, they have optical lens production, sun lens production. They end up with lenses that go into frames. They have frames that create eyeglasses. And then for distribution, they run their own logistics system. They have their own retail stores, their own wholesale stores. They have some independent distributors. They have Luxottica retail chains, and they provide customer service in the eyeglass industry. They're massive, and presently, we'll see some of the channels that they come out of, the actual stores that they run. So a different approach to a vertical marketing system is a contractual VMS. The producer doesn't own the channel. They don't own the production and the wholesale in the store. They have a legal relationship. So if you're a Midas muffler shop, you can't also sell, I don't know, Amoco products by contract. Independent Grocers of America has a contractual relationship with the channel members. So it's a different approach. Rather than ownership, we agree under contract as to what we're going to do. Then we have an administered vertical marketing system. In this case, a channel member, often but not always the producer, is so powerful, so strong, so much in demand that you are going to agree to work with them because you can't really imagine running your place without their cooperation, without working with them. There are, who's been to Whole Foods recently? Whole Foods. So Whole Foods, you don't actually find a lot of, if any, Procter & Gamble or Kraft products. They have their own brand. But other than that, just about every grocery store in the country is going to want to have Kraft, Unilever, Procter & Gamble, Kellogg's, Nestle's, Hershey's. So these are folks which retail stores are going to be willing to work with in a sense of cooperation because they want the products in their stores. That's the idea of an administered vertical marketing system. So whatever type of channel distribution we make, we have to make some decisions about them. How intense is our distribution going to be? So how many channels do you need? Do I need to back up? I'm happy to back up. Do I need to back up? You're good? Yeah, I'm just, you have to throw something at me, otherwise I don't know how to stop. So how many do we want? How much is the optimal number for intensity? And as is often true in marketing, the right answer is just enough. Just enough to meet the desires of the target market. For some products, you have to be intense. You have to be everywhere. We actually talked about products like that. For others, you can be very selective or exclusive in your distribution. You have to know the competition, the industry, and your consumers. Anything, though, that you do beyond just what the market needs is a waste. I think our example maybe previously was, I think it was previously, Maserati. If you want a Maserati, you're willing to drive to Columbus to get a Maserati. And Maserati isn't going to sell a lot more Maseratis by opening up one in Akron, one in Cleveland, one in Kent, one in Cincinnati. That's just wasteful. Because that's a special case where people who really want it are going to go wherever it is. On the other hand, if you're trying to sell Hershey's chocolate bars, a single store in Columbus isn't going to cut it. People want it everywhere. So while the decision about this distribution is sometimes seen as a single one, you really have to decide on intensity at each channel level. How many wholesalers is it gonna, or distributors is it going to take? How many retailers is it going to take? And what distribution? So we have to think about intensity at each channel level, given our market's needs. So we have to understand the market well. This is just going to go to the point of what we talked about. intensive distribution, you need distribution through every reasonable outlet in a market, because that's what consumers want. You might have intensive retail coverage, but selective wholesale coverage, because that wholesaler can work to provide that intensive distribution. That's what they do. So, for intensive distribution, you have the series of convenience goods we've thought about before. How many guys know Häagen-Dazs? How many guys like ice cream in general? Häagen-Dazs in particular? Häagen-Dazs fans? That's a pretty good ice cream, right? Their initial idea for distribution was they would sell Häagen-Dazs only at Häagen-Dazs stores. So if you were going grocery shopping and you wanted ice cream as part of your grocery list, you had to go from your grocery store to a Häagen-Dazs store. People like Häagen-Dazs ice cream, but you know what? They weren't really excited about having to get to a unique channel of distribution to get their Häagen-Dazs ice cream. They moved to a less exclusive channel of distribution, away from this idea where it was only available at gourmet shops in New York City. For years, IAMS, you guys know IAMS, pet food, IAMS dog food, whatever? For years, the only way to get IAMS was to go to a vet or to a pet supply store. That was it. Very, if not exclusive, at least selective in terms of the distribution. Eventually, they said, you know what? Wonder if people would buy our product more if it was available in grocery stores. They moved to grocery stores. They moved from number five to number one in annual sales as a result of that change. So thinking about and understanding what the market wants vis-a-vis your channel of distribution is important. Luxottica, which I just talked about, the eyeglass company, has 6,400 retail outlets in the United States, Canada, China, Australia, New Zealand, and the United Kingdom. The headquarters of the retail division is in Mason, Ohio. The retail banners, and I think you know these names, even though you don't connect it with being Luxottica, include Sunglasses Hut International, Lens Crafters, OPSM, Laubman & Pink, Budget Eyewear, Pearl Opticians, Pearl Vision, Surf Eyes, Sears Optical, Target Optical, Kmart Optical, Cole Vision, Icon, and iLori. They also own iMed Vision Care, one of the leading managed vision care organizations in the United States. That's a pretty strongly vertically integrated channel of distribution. And they're intensive. They're everywhere. Selective distribution, we talked about a while ago, were things like shopping goods. We have distribution through multiple, but not all, reasonable outlets in a market. Step two, who knows what step two sells? Kids' toys, right? Step two, you can't buy that at every place in town. They're available through selective retail outlets because people are willing to travel to get them. And I don't know what my example tools are down there at Home Depot, so I don't remember what that one was. So if you want to have a stronger relationship with your consumers than you can get through intensive distribution where you don't know who's selling the product, it's sold everywhere. Sometimes you sell in selective set of stores. So you can get improved customer service, you get more quality control over what's going on, and within legal limits, you may be able to maintain some influence over the prices that your product sell at because you're dealing with a select group of channel members. And then exclusive distribution through a single wholesaling middleman, a single retailer in an area. There's perhaps my Maserati example. Anybody know the men's haberdashery named Bijan? Bijan? So a little bit. So Bijan Haberdashery, he caters to exclusively expensive menswear. I have several pictures of myself outside of Bijan's store in Beverly Hills because to shop in the store, you must have an appointment. You can't just wander in and shop. I think he has like three stores. That's it. People who have the money are willing to travel to his place. And then we have other luxury type residences. So distribution through a very limited set of retailers in a market because people are willing to go. That's especially good if the distributor is the one who has to furnish specialized installation, specialized repair services. You don't want anybody mucking around with your Lamborghini. You need it done by the people that you know and trust. So, as we think about this, these are reminders, things we talked about before. From a strategy viewpoint, convenience products available in every possible place. These are things that are purchased frequently, conveniently, a minimum shopping effort, magazine, snack food, gas, milk. If we're talking about a shopping type of product with selective distribution, consumer compares several alternatives on criteria such as price, quality, or style, computers, furniture, health center, and specialty product. Very limited distribution where the consumer makes a special effort to search out and buy luxury car, tax attorney, designer clothes, Botox injections. I think I had wedding dresses the last time we saw this particular set of examples. People are wanting to travel. So we should be able to relate the interest of the consumer, the level of involvement of the consumer, how far they're willing to travel with these various types of products and the type of distribution that goes with them. Is good? Now, ideally, we're all pals, we're all working together for the better good, for the more efficient flow of goods and services to our consumer. Of course, in the real world, things don't often go that smoothly, and so we do end up with conflict. So distribution goals among the channel members should be based on shared goals and cooperative actions, but conflicts do occur. We get struggle for control within the channel, especially if we don't own it. So we have to understand as managers the issues related to conflict. We have to be ready for them, figure out how to control and manage those conflicts, just like Jeff did with his retail sales. Channel conflict exists when one channel member perceives some other channel member to be acting in a way that prevents the first channel member from achieving its distribution objectives, so it's not working fairly with the system. For example, as the internet first rolled out in the early days, Home Depot turned around to its suppliers and said, wait a minute, you sell through our stores. Now you want to also sell directly to the consumer from your website? That's not good. No, you can't do that. Obviously, that's changed over time, but that was the initial conflict and their initial response. At the same time, Lowe's, early on, said, fine, good. So it encouraged its suppliers to go online to win favor and from those same firms. So their initial stances were different. Times change and their positions change, but that was the original situation. So we have horizontal conflict. So you can think of conflict distributors or wholesalers or retailers at the same level of the channel of distribution. For example, Walmart versus Target. We have conflict at that level. So different types of middlemen at the same level. Hartville Hardware versus Lowe's Paint Department. So you've been selling your particular brand of paint for a long time at Hartville Hardware, everything's been going good, they've been a supportive local retailer for you, and suddenly you decide you're going to also sell your brand of paint at Lowe's down the road. Hartville turns around to you and says, what's going on? Why are you selling with those guys? That's not right. I've been supporting you. What are you doing? Little retail-to-retail conflict in the channel where Hartville feels they're now being treated unfairly by you. Scrambled merchandising causes some interesting conflicts at the retail level, where a middleman diversifies into non-traditional areas. So Kroger's, if you asked, I don't know, 15 or 20 years ago, whatever, sold groceries. They were a grocery store. Now suddenly, appliance manufacturers are selling small appliances at your local Kroger's. Wait a minute. I'm the small appliance store in town. I've been supporting you, I've been selling product, and now you're selling at Kroger's? Target puts Starbucks inside their store, can create a little controversy, can cause conflict with other channel members. But why do this sort of thing? Well, the middleman gets more customer traffic, so the appliance manufacturer sells through appliance stores, they sell through grocery stores, they sell at drug stores. The customer gets more convenience. You don't have to go to a small appliance store to get that toaster. Just pick it up at your local CVS store or Kroger's. And the producer gets expanded market coverage. They're in more areas, but it can upset your channel partners as you start to do this sort of thing. I'm just waiting to see if pens are still writing. We good? Vertical conflict is another sort of thing that rears its ugly head. This involves conflict between firms at different levels within the same channel. It can be quite severe. So the producer is fighting with, fussing with, the person, the entity they depend on getting their product or service downstream, the wholesaler, or the producer fusses with the retailers. Anheuser-Busch decided that the distributors, the beer distributors, weren't paying enough attention to them, weren't carrying enough inventory of their product, and they came up with a great plan. It was the Anheuser-Busch 100% share of mind program. They wanted distributors to carry almost exclusively their product. Distributors said, what are you, crazy? We serve a bunch of different bars, a bunch of different restaurants. We aren't going to carry just your product. So they were trying to provide financial incentives to wholesalers to supply only the King of Beers, only Budweiser products. That didn't go over well. So conflicts within the vertical channel occur because manufacturers, for example, think that wholesalers aren't promoting their products well enough, aren't holding sufficient inventories of their products, and so you get fusses between the producer and the wholesaler, which just makes things clunky, awkward. A major conflict happens when the producers go around the wholesalers and sell directly to consumers, as, of course, now we're very used to. And in the pandemic, it's been massive. But it set up a lot of conflict in the early days. So selling directly to consumers by establishing their own distribution centers, their own websites, and going around the wholesaler is sure to upset your wholesalers. Or going around them to sell directly to retailers, these are all going to set up problems. Now, some companies are a little more friendly in terms of how they go around their channel members. Anybody know Coleman as a brand? What's Coleman sell? Coleman? Coleman grills, Coleman outdoor supplies, Coleman camping equipment, okay? Coleman decides that they're going to open up some distribution centers. They're going to be factory stores, but rather than upsetting everybody in their channel, they instead reduce their dealer dissatisfaction, a little bit at least, by selling in those factory stores mostly reconditioned merchandise, excess inventory that didn't sell at other stores. So they didn't just bypass their channel distribution with everything. They tried to make nice. So there are ways to do it. Get in better touch with your consumer without upsetting your channel distribution members. An old example, but a true one, Goodyear decided to start selling its tires directly to retailers. Previously, the only place you'd get a Goodyear tire was from a Goodyear store. So you're invested in a Goodyear store. You got money in it. It's your store, but you're Goodyear. All of a sudden, Goodyear turns and says, you know what? You can still sell them, but we're going to sell it at this Sears store down the road. So you can see, instead of being an authorized Goodyear dealer, these people became antagonized Goodyear dealers. So it created conflict with its independent dealers, caused hard feelings, and in fact, flattened the firm's replacement tire sales for quite a while. Instead of growing it, it slowed things up. So it wasn't a very good plan for Goodyear. So if you're a wholesaler and your producer is about to go around you directly to the retailer, what can you do? Well, of course, be ears up, be aware it's going to happen. Then find ways to offer improved, efficient operations to your retailers. You set up a system of order handling or inventory control for them that the producer isn't likely to do. You have better IT, better IS, better operating systems than the producer does. Or maybe you can provide management assistance to your retailers. You have the expertise. You know what's going on in the area. You know what's going on with the competition. You can help with retail store layout. You can help with merchandise selection that will work well and sell well. You can help with promotions or inventory control. So you find a way to make yourself more valuable, and the retailers will miss you if you're gone. The elimination of these intermediaries in the supply chain is referred to as cutting out the middleman, or as you see, disintermediation. Creates channel conflict, obviously. Black and Decker, well aware of this issue, chose to avoid cutting out the middlemen, their retail stores, by not using the internet to sell their products directly. Rather, they advertise their products, they have information on the products, they can get you interested in it, but then when you want to buy the thing, they direct you to websites and stores that carry the firm's products, Lowe's, Kmart, Kohl's, Sears, etc. So again, they've arranged a bit of channel member relationship. They can have some direct contact with the customer, but they're not stealing all the sales from the retailers. I can. There? So you do the online search for a store near you. Give us your zip code. We good? So it's been a while since we've heard from KSU alum Gary Chinetti and his partner, who set up a corporation, Garrick. As you may or may not recall from earlier in the semester, Garrick markets a variety of lawn care products, composting products, topsoil, mulch, bark, turf, stone, and aggregate for home and recreational areas. And they have a bit of a sense of humor given what they sell. I like their product on the right-hand side. It's not manure, it's boonure as a fertilizer. So he's going to chat with us a little bit about channels of distribution in his area, but now he's going to begin to integrate this with some other strategy issues, including pricing strategies. So let's see a little bit about how these things are interrelated and might be a little more complex than we initially think about.
Interesting enough, you ask about pricing. We are currently going through what they call line reviews. And the line reviews with Walmart, Home Depot, and Lowe's is basically, what is your price going to be for next season when we start? And what they've done a very good job of trying to accelerate your season. So you're still in the middle of your season for the year before, and they want to get your pricing out for next season. Well, in this era of unpredictability, you know, what's the cost of fuel going to be in 3-4 months? What is the how many trucks are going to be available or out of business? I mean, it's very difficult right now to figure out what your price is going to be. So for the first time, we're going to tie it into a fuel surcharge, which says that if fuel prices go way, way up, then our pricing is going to follow that. Obviously, the retailers don't like that because they don't can't they have a difficult time planning in times of uncertainty. But also, what's interesting is when people think of pricing, a lot of times they don't think of pricing as marketing. And you know, I know there were 4 P's. There could be 5 or 25 P's, but it was product, place, price, and promotion. And price was an area where everybody says, well, that's the easy part. You know, you just kind of like figure out where your costs are and then add 20 or 30 or 40%. But there's so many other things that come into consideration with pricing. Are these products going to be looked at as a loss leader for your retailers? Is this product going to be used as a discounted product as a promotion? Is the price going to be, 2-for-1? So there's so many different things that you can look at, and it really, really is a function of marketing. You know, in the end, you go back to your supply chain group and you say, let's look at our costs. What's our cost going to be to get this product in a bag or in bulk or whatever it is to the marketplace to be able to price this product or have this product priced appropriately for your customer? But then now you've got to think about, what's our strategy? Do we want to get this product into every single store in the United States right now, and we need to do it quickly, so we're going to have to price it appropriately, very competitively? Do we have an advantage in the marketplace? Is this product so innovative that we're going to have this window of a year or 2 years or 6 months to price it out very, very high to realize a great profit margin on it, and we realize that our pricing will come down once our competitors catch on? or how the customer look at this and say, how do we want to position this product in the marketplace? So it's very much a function of marketing.
And hopefully as you hear this, you know, those cognitive lights are going off. Yeah, we thought about this when we talked about pricing, but we also now connect these things with our channel of distribution. So we talk about penetration pricing just as a pricing strategy. But the thing is, you want intensive distribution. You got to work with those channel partners with that low price to make sure the thing is available everywhere. So I think he does a nice job of bringing those various concepts together for us. In the old days, we didn't talk about supply chain management. We mostly talked about transportation and logistics. In fact, at one time, we weren't the Department of Marketing and Entrepreneurship. We were the Department of Marketing and Transportation. So let's think about logistics management as part of the supply chain management, which involves transportation too. So logistics management involves those activities that focus on getting the right amount of the right product to the right place at the right time at the lowest possible cost. So logistics management is the practice of organizing the cost-effective flow of, now think about the entire channel of distribution from the start, of raw materials into the manufacturer, of in-process inventory, putting together pieces and parts and components to make a thing, of the finished good itself, and all of the related information from the point of origin of the raw materials, all the way to the point of consumption to satisfy customer requirements. Gary's going to have more to tell us about this in a little bit. But that's this idea of logistics management, the cost-effective flow of all these things from the origin to the ultimate consumer. A supply chain, which you've heard a lot about recently, is a sequence of firms that perform the activities required to create and deliver a good or service to consumers or industrial users. And we've heard about all sorts of problems with the supply chain, right? With the transportation side, with the storage side, with the raw materials availability side, breaking different parts of our supply chain. So it includes suppliers that provide the raw material inputs, or can't, the manufacturers who puts these raw materials into products or has problems, the wholesalers and the retailers that deliver the finished good. So we're going to hear Rob Trimetti talk a little bit about supply chain management, and he's going to walk us through some of this stuff.
Well, first of all, when you talk about supply chain, you'll hear about the terminology. When I was at Kent, we never heard about supply chain management. We heard about procurement. We heard about logistics. And if you look at supply chain, for example, if you look at Home Depot or Walmart, they sell stuff. And some of them cross over a little bit into manufacturing or processing of products, but very little. If you look at it, their business is retail. And behind that retail, to get that product to the point that it's sitting on the shelf or sitting in that store, just think about all the things that have to go on behind that, behind the scenes, if you will, to get that product to the store. You know, the simple, easy one to think about is, you know, a truck. A truck's got to deliver to the store. But when you start to look at it and you kind of peel, if you will, peel away the onion, layer upon layer, if you look at those products, they're made from different raw materials and they're made from different types of manufacturing processes. Especially in today, in light of that we're in a global economy, a lot of these products that are being marketed and being sold in the retail establishments are coming from China or coming from India or coming from Vietnam or coming from Thailand or coming from Europe or coming from countries that, you know, maybe 10 years ago weren't even considered in part of the supply chain, if you will. So the opportunity for managing the purchasing, the procurement, the raw materials, all the way from, you know, forest products and mining or whatever, the opportunity to manage every single iteration, every single movement, every single process, if you will, or process formulations and what have you, is there's a tremendous opportunity for that supply chain from the time that it was, you know, grown to the time it was harvested to the time it was manufactured all the way to the point of sale. There's a great opportunity for efficiencies, for profitability, for companies to be formed around helping facilitate all that. And one of the best supply chain companies in the world has been Walmart. And if you look at really their expertise, a lot of it has come around distribution and transportation. And they're one of, if not the largest right now, I think, logistics or trucking company in the United States right now, the Walmart trucking company, if you will. So again, supply chain is a lot more today. It crosses all the way over from growing and harvesting and manufacturing and processing and airplanes and...
and barges, trucks, rails, to getting those items onto the shelf. We usually think about ourselves managing our company, managing our brand. But when we put it in the context of supply chain, we recognize that's not really going to be good enough. Who are our supply chain partners? Where are those efficiencies? Are we working together or not to effectively and efficiently create a flow of products to that ultimate consumer such that everybody's making good profit and the consumer gets the product when they want it at a reasonable price? So it's a little bit different way of thinking about what's going on. So it is supply chain management, right? The integration and the organization of information, ITIS people, and logistic activities across firms in a supply chain for the purposes of creating and delivering goods and services that provide value to our customers. So we have to be thinking now in a different domain, not just within our organization, but across our organizations. Supply chain management requires the application of information technology that allows our channel partners to share and or operate systems for order processing, for transportation, for scheduling, and to help us do inventory and facilities management. So we have to have pretty good faith. You ever hear the term, information is power? You have to have pretty good faith in these channel members because you're going to share information with them. Now, supply chain management does not replace everything that we know about management in general. Rather, it builds on best general management practices. The phrase, a chain is only as strong as its weakest link. You, dear friends, don't want to be the channel partner that is the weakest link, the one that's goofing up, the one that isn't doing things efficiently and effectively. And if you're a manager involved in supply chain, you have to have your antenna up, your metrics out, to figure out if there are problems with other channel members. Before attempting to deal, then, with supply chain issues, you've got to be sure that you're able to provide quality products or services that will satisfy the channel members and the customer on time, or else you become the weakest link, in a cost-effective manner. So you have to get your own management house in order before you start worrying about other channel members. Supply chain management usually requires significant changes in the organization's structure because it's going to cut across functional areas and even across different firms. So you can't just say to the procurement guy, hey, go figure this out. It's got to come from the top. So the responsibility and authority for implementing supply chain management has to be placed at the highest levels within the organization because it's going to require people to take on new duties, new responsibilities, have new vision, work with people and entities they haven't worked with before, so we don't run into the kinds of problems we have right now in the world. When I see pens moving, I don't know if people are writing notes to mom or, you know, doing homework or if they're taking notes. But supply chain management requires firms to put in place information systems and metrics that focus on the performance across the entire supply chain. So you know you're doing well. How are your supply chain partners doing? Why? Well, if you don't have these information systems and metrics in place, these measures in place, you're likely to miss some individual unit in the system which is not doing what's good for the supply chain, which is trying to maximize their performance without regard to the broader impact on the supply chain. Go back to Jeffrey talking about his original way of dealing with vendors. He was trying to maximize his side without any concern for anybody else in the channel. Doing that cause problems for everybody, including the ultimate consumer. and reduces everybody's profitability. Supply chain management means that you not only need to do better than your competition, which, by the way, is tough enough, as you would know, right? Your company doing better than the competition, but now you need to compete against other competitions, multi-firm chains. So you have to see that your chain is better than everybody else's. You need me to go back one? Yep. You bet. Oops. Sorry. We good? So, you know, as if you didn't have enough problems just managing your own brand and your own people and your own firm and making sure it's successful, now you're managing your company and its partners against other supply chains. So, from this perspective, you need to not only work better among the functional areas of your own firm, but you've got to think about how you will partner with other firms in your supply chain to succeed against competition in their supply chain. Gives me a headache just thinking about it. So we keep you busy. We good? So let's take for the visual learners and think a little bit about what's going on. On the left-hand side, we have raw materials. On the right-hand side, we have end consumers. And in the middle, we have a bunch of supply chain stuff going on. So we see the raw materials are going into the supplier network, and they're making pieces and parts and components and putting those components together into bigger and bigger things. And eventually, as they move around that supplier network, things get shoved out into the enterprise. And they're going to combine marketing, sourcing, operations, and logistics. And eventually, they'll take that finished product and get it out into their distribution network, right? Their wholesalers, their distributors, their retailers, and all that's going to work out to get to the ultimate consumer. So let's relate logistics management and supply chain management to supplier networks and marketing channels. So when we're talking about the flow of the goods, the transportation, the barges, the planes, the trains, the trucks, whatever I didn't say, the airplanes, now we're concerned about the inbound flow of raw materials and parts to producers and how that stuff all gets appropriately transported to the right place at the right time, and then the outbound flow of the finished product from that producer to the consumer. And taken together, prior to the ultimate producer of the finished product, we have the supplier network all going about its business. And then that ultimate producer of the finished product runs a marketing channel. Product has to flow, be stored, get out to wholesalers, retailers, and the ultimate consumer. So this is the supply chain management issue, combining management of the supplier network and the marketing channel. So it's no longer enough to have good relationships just with individual suppliers. We need to communicate with an entire network of suppliers who need to cooperate and coordinate their own activities related to our firm with one another. Busy, busy, busy interactions. So looking at it in an example of our automobile industry, what might we find in the supplier network? Well, we have raw materials as more than just these, but you've got steel, aluminum, rubber, and of course those things don't just pop up out of nowhere. They come from other places too. They come from the ground or from forests. Etc. And so these raw materials are made into component parts in the supplier network, such as transmissions and brakes and seats and a bunch of other things. Those component parts eventually in the supplier network are given over to some assembly plants where they come together in suspension and chassis and engine, and eventually they get over to the auto manufacturer, that is the producer and seller of the final product. And so they get assembled by General Motors, by Ford, by Toyota. And then that finished product gets moved into the marketing channel. In this case, not so much a retailer wholesaler, but a dealer network, Cadillac, Chevy, Lincoln, Mercury, Toyota, Lexus, and finally out to the ultimate consumer. So we're trying to manage all this stuff so it works well together. And here's the image of the supplier network and the marketing channel. All together, we're talking about supply chain management. So I don't know if that helps visualize it or not. So we got the idea. We got the concept. I understand what you're talking about. And what I want to do is align my supply chain and my marketing strategy. Okay, that seems pretty good. Let's think about it. So, in real life, our supply chain team may be tempted to focus on their own short-term operational results. That's not good. And a focus on short-term costs or short-term inventory is not going to produce the intended positive profit results for everybody. So let's think about three elements that we might manage in a company. We might have to think about customer needs. After all, we do talk about marketing as being what? The discovery and the satisfaction your consumer needs, wants, and desires, right, at a profit, through your effort of the firm. But we're running a company. We have to make money. We have to watch over our stuff. So we might also talk about issues of efficiency in our company and asset utilization. So customer needs, which ought to be the focus of our marketing efforts and our firm, we'll have at the top of the pyramid. Efficiencies, well, efficiencies are important. I don't want to pretend like we can't pay attention to them. So efficiencies are important cost-related focuses to reduce our transportation costs, to reduce our inventory costs, and reduce our production costs, but hopefully in line with our customers' needs. And assets, you have a lot of money tied up in your assets, right? Asset utilization, then, is getting the most out of our production facilities, our capital, plant, equipment, people, they're all expensive. And so you have a manager out there of a manufacturing line. We've said this before. What would all manufacturing lines love to do? Make long runs of the same product. They don't want to take time to change colors and change models and make a big one and make a little one. They would just love to make the same thing. Very efficient. Might be that your consumers don't all want exactly the same thing, but okay. So here we are trying to balance these things. So let's say our supply chain focuses on the lowest purchasing costs, lowest procurement costs possible. Does that seem like the worst idea in the world on the surface? You want to get things at the lowest cost? Seems okay as a concept. They focused on high plant utilization. Seem reasonable on the face of it. And they focus on carrying the lowest inventories they can, because inventories are expensive. But your customer wants the highest quality products, wants innovation, and wants a broad product line. Do you begin to see the problem here? That these things that sounded okay a minute ago, when you realize what the consumer's, customer's needs, wants, and desires are, they don't match up. You can't very well have high quality products if your vendors are buying the cheapest possible stuff. You can't be innovative with a broad product line if your company is focused on long runs of the same thing and carrying little or small inventories, right? You got to disconnect. So what are we going to do here? Well, we're going to find a way to integrate, close the disconnect. So if our customers want high quality products, innovation, and broad product line, you've got to work with your supply chain, first of all, to understand the consumer's needs, wants, and desires, please. And then focus not on the lowest possible cost, but on high supplier quality, on shortest time to market. They want innovation. And since you can't have long runs of the same product over and over again, focus on the shortest manufacturing changeover time, so you're efficient. So this begins to cure our issue, cure our problem, close our gap. So we need to understand our customers' needs. How important and what value do they put on lead time? It's going to drive your supply chain. On quick response to changes in the marketplace. On efficient consumer responses, dependability, communication, convenience. They won't all value everything the same way. What is it that your customers want in this segment? How does it relate to your supply chain efforts? So, we cure our problem by understanding our supply chain and its strengths and weaknesses relevant to our consumers' needs, wants, and desires. We harmonize our supply chain strengths with our marketing strategies. And in some cases, you will recognize that you need to redesign the supply chain. Some channel partners aren't going to be innovative, aren't going to be able to provide high-quality products. Well, that's not going to work. all of this relies on solid understanding of the consumer and a good flow of information. So information plays a major role in supply chain responsiveness and supply chain efficiency, done through EDIs, electronic data interchanges, that combine proprietary computer and telecommunication technologies to exchange electronic invoices, payments, and importantly, information among suppliers, manufacturers, and retailers. If your suppliers don't know what your inventory demands are, don't know what your customer orders look like, don't know what supplies of things you have in-house and you need to order, how are they going to support you? And how are they going to know that? Through really solid information flow, IS, IT, good operating systems. So it's really easy to say about and really hard to do. Let's take a visual look at this, what this suggests. So we're going to start with a customer requirements, okay? And your organization gets in what's often called a tender for specification. It's like customer order, customer specs. So it is the customer's requirements. So you have to head scratch in your own company and say, well, what do they want? What do they need? Can we do it? So first of all, you have to get that information. You want the order laying on the floor. So it comes into your company's network, okay? And as you begin to ask this questioning within your own organization, you talk to manufacturing and marketing. This is what our customer wants, what they need. Can we do that? Maybe you look upstream and you see, hey, suppliers, can you provide us with this sort of component parts? Then there's a little bit of negotiation, a little bit of bidding. We're going back and forth. Eventually, we have a contract with the specifications that will meet the consumer's needs. So now we have an order. Yay, we have a sale, we have an order. Still more to do. So now the order comes into our company and we've processed. Now, one situation, of course, is it's in our inventory. We negotiated, got the seal, it's in our inventory. So we have to send information to the inventory. Hey, box up and ship a bunch of these, get out to the warehouse, gets through transportation, and we ship it over to the customer. That was easy. Of course, sometimes it's not that easy. We don't have it in inventory. So instead, we have to get involved in order planning and scheduling. So now we're going to our manufacturing side, say, okay, guys, get this going. We want to know on a regular basis, how's it working process? When's it ready? The client always wants to know, when's this thing ready? When's it coming out? Is it being made? When's it going to ship? Get the final production process, goes into inventory, warehouse, transportation, and delivery. Of course, sometimes it turns out that you don't have the stuff that's necessary to make this app. You have to go out to your own inventory. And you have to sometimes have to purchase things. Purchase it from who? Well, upstream suppliers. So now you do the same thing upstream with the order from them. So you turn around to your supplier and say, hey, we need a bunch of these widgets in green to these specs. Can you make it? They go through the same thing on their side. Either they can or can't. They have to track it. They have to make it. They have to ship it to you. Or they have to go up to their own suppliers and get it done. So once this thing gets out to the consumer, they get the product, yay. There might be parts and things, you know, at home. If you get a printer, you need the ink. In a big organization, you get the, I can't think of what. You get the something and you need the something else. So then your customer might need to be trained, so you have to be ready to do that. They're going to use the product. There might be maintenance going on. Maybe there's some repair that you have to be ready to do, diagnose the problem. Eventually, it goes out, goes away, and the whole thing starts again. But there's the process. And we have to have a flow of information so that we're coordinated through all this entire customer-driven supply chain. Hence my constant badgering of my need for ITIS, to be doing all this stuff behind the scenes to make sure that we know what's going on. When the information breaks, this doesn't happen. So we not only need information to manage the supply chain, but to allow us to balance the total cost of our logistical efforts with the value we provide to our customers based on what their needs, what their wants, what their desires are, and how much they're willing to pay. And I think we will. Oh, we're essentially done. Eaton Corporation, a big Fortune 500 company, I think headquartered in Cleveland, but it doesn't matter. says to its own clients, to its own folks, e-commerce resource for channel partners. Eaton values its channel partners and offers timely, accurate, reliable e-commerce applications designed to facilitate the ease of doing business. And it talks to you about how, as a member of their supply channel, you can get information with them and from them. So it's a real thing. It's out there. There's an example. And if you're interested, MNIS 44062, Supply Chain Management. Have a happy weekend. Passover, Easter, Ramadan, whatever. Bye-bye. Oh, yeah, mini test opens tomorrow.